Welcome to Bald Move Television. For the next 5 weeks, we are your officially unofficial podcast for Cinemax's Banshee television series. Tonight, we're talking about episode 404, Innocent Might Be a Bit of a Stretch. I'm your co-host, Aaron.
And I am Cecily, the main host.
we're here talking about Banshee.
We're doing it again. Today is one of those 5 weeks, so there's only four left.
Well, whatever, you know. It's parts of 5 weeks.
No, I'm just preparing people to start, you know, the grieving process.
It's true. We are halfway through the season. There's only 8 episodes this season. Don't forget. It's a beautiful, beautiful sunny Sunday. We're in here talking about Banshee because we love it so fucking much. What did you think of this episode?
I thought it was mostly awesome.
Yep.
There was a lot of just badass action. I thought it was really interesting, the way they intertwined Carrie and Proctor's story throughout this thing, even though we're not quite sure why, even when Job calls her on it later.
Well, even Calvin and the neo-Nazis and Watts are mixed into it, too, because Calvin and Proctor are all joined at the hip, or at least Watts is.
No, but I mean, like, visually, even some of the Carrie and Proctor scenes are tied so close together.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
When Bunker was giving her the notes, it was all one shot as she pulled away and Proctor pulled in. So
yeah.
It was really interesting how they did that. What did you think?
I thought it's the best Banshee episode this season. In fact, the only thing I didn't like about it is the reveal of the serial killer being like this ludicrous
Hellboy Jr.
Yeah. No, they're like, you're right. They're like, what was that guy, Rasputin from Hellboy?
Yeah.
Like they're trying to bring about Ragnarok, and he's got the subdermal horn implants, and he's got the red dragon back tattoo, and it's just so tropey.
He's definitely an amalgamation of all the serial killers, and his girlfriend is an amalgamation of all the crazy women that would choose to be with them.
I just don't get it, because, I mean, I guess you could say that, like, so this is like a big serial killer trope, and I don't know.
Also,
like,
can I stop you right there and gloat for the fact that it's definitely not Burton?
Well, no, hold on. If you think I'm giving
more
up that
tinfoil hat,
I is this guy more tropey than the 7-foot-tall Indian warlord terrorist?
Tropey?
Yeah, I mean, like, not tropey, but just over the top. And like,
okay, because I was going to say, I found nothing about Clayton to be tropey in any stretch of the word. This guy, for sure. I think Clayton was very scary.
Well, the other thing about Clayton is that he had, you know, backstory, and he had history, and he had character moments, and he had moments where you're like, I kind of see his point, you know?
Well, could they reveal that later?
I'm just saying that, like, halfway through the season, Clayton was a much better, even though he was still kind of over the top and almost cartoonish, he still had a lot more character development that made us give a damn about.
Oh, definitely. So you're asking if I would prefer, or if we as an audience ship would prefer that it be someone we already know?
No, I don't even care about that. I'm talking about just, like,
or with
keeping the serial killer's identity and mystery might have been a mistake, because it precluded us from having any kind of, you know, feeling about him one way or another. So now it's like, I just, like, when the reaction is, oh, he's a neo-Satanist, like, ugh. Like, that's just dumb, I think. And right. I don't know. Maybe they'll bring it around. Here's my theory of Bad Bowtie Burton. I think that Rebecca is meant to look like those other, like, that this was either Proctor or Burton acting alone, taking the opportunity.
So Rebecca's still alive?
No, it's taking the opportunity to kill Rebecca in a way similar to the other girls to not arouse suspicion. Because they really make a big point of her and Proctor being in a bad way. Like with the flashbacks with him, that she was mad because she got impatient, didn't want to wait for his big reveal. And maybe that was never coming. Maybe he was just keeping her on the string, and him feeling betrayed, both business in the business sense and like their weird psychosexual niece uncle sense.
I didn't get that. I'm not disagreeing with you, but my interpretation of all of this is that he's doing the classic someone I love is dead guilt stage of grief, and that is he's thinking about all the ways that he let her down before she died and what he could have done better. You know, he should have given her that business. He should have let her go out on her own and do this or that. I think that's what those flashbacks are all about.
So it was last week when he was strangling the street urchin, denial?
anger.
He was definitely, well, he's angry too, yeah. But the fact that he was strangling someone that is already dead.
Denial is, I think, doing a press conference and saying, oh yeah, and she was also my niece.
Okay, sure. So shall we get into
episode? Yeah, yeah. Let's start with the credits. Anything interesting you noticed?
We have a pre-credit scene of the serial killer.
I was just doing it by sort of everyone's story. I have a group together, so I thought I'd just start with the credits.
So, we got the FBI badge.
This is a half-ass cast. Get it together. Get it less together.
We got the FBI badge, which I thought was interesting because that heralded the arrival of Veronica, Eliza Dushku. And we also get a doll. I thought it was funny that there was like a doll at a warehouse standing at like
with a match.
Kind of like something Andy would get up to in Toy Story. And yes. She's got an unlit match and suddenly it's lit. And I'm like, oh, that's on second watch. That's fucking awesome. There's a birthday cake that said happy birthday, Brock, which came up.
That was interesting. Sometimes I feel like these credit sequences are all the things you'll get throughout the season.
It's an amalgam. It's definitely something that's constantly changing.
Because there was some graffiti on a wall, and there was a Polaroid of it, and it said love saves, something like that. Love, and then it was scratched
love
out.
Love wins,
and it scratched out. It said love loses, and then the Polaroid next to it said right, and then in quotes, dad. So I think that was definitely an allusion to Deva, right?
I feel like that to me made me think that Hood is doomed. Like, I feel like ultimately his arc in this season is going to lead him to die.
But he and Carrie are falling back in love.
Are they?
I don't know. She came to visit him in the prison, and I'm definitely reading way into that scene.
Okay, that's fine.
But I just want them to have the nice house and the family together and just be stupid rich.
I feel like that they've been through so much at this point that right now they're just really intimate friends. There's no kind of romance connection between them.
I know in my heart of hearts it's not going to happen, but...
there's also the dude with his hole in his chest, which symbolizes Bunker. And then there is the huge dude that had the hole punches, like the five across his chest. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. And I thought that might be Watts. Mm-hmm. But then they do another like set of seven hole punches going down that forms the upside down cross that the serial killer is wearing.
Ooh.
But the problem is the serial killer is not this beefy a dude. Like,
okay, so my interpretation of the guy, the angry guy in prison, was definitely the neo-Nazis or Watts specifically. He's out now, but that prison dude had the upside down cross on his back. So are these neo-Nazis and the devil worshippers?
Wait a second. Connected. You're saying somehow? Watts, the guy who got let out, has the upside down cross on his...
No.
Okay.
I'm saying that I interpreted Watts as being connected to our opening credits of the guy in prison. So now that the guy in prison in the opening credits has the upside down cross, are they connected with these two groups somehow?
Not knowingly, because I don't think the neo-Nazis would be down with Satanists.
It seems to go hand in hand. I don't know. I don't know much about hating people.
Okay, because like they're like I always thought of the Nazis as being like very far right wing, like ultra far, and they're like very, the Nazis weren't an atheist organization for sure. I always feel like that they're rooted in like a what you know would be fairly called a perverted view of Christianity.
There's
sure,
a very big difference between being a Satanist and being an atheist.
I don't want to get a bunch of feedback. I do know that there are Satanists out there that are not what you would call devil worshippers or like they don't chop people up. It's just a different like pagan neo pagan religion,
right? Definitely not
atheist. Hey, as an atheist, it's all crazy to me. So, I don't really, as long as no one starts cutting people up or no one starts defunding Planned Parenthood, I'm all cool with anybody's religion. But.
Okay. So what I have up front here is a serial killer is some sort of master cook. I don't know about him as a person, but he's definitely welcome to prepare a meal for me sometime.
That's the thing. It's so
weird.
They
seem to be very well off, don't they?
And they're just like having this conversation like, oh, you got your promotion at work. Oh, that's so nice. And it's just such a like that. I felt like this. You remember season one, Mr. Robot?
Yeah.
The big bad of that season, how kind of ridiculous he was. And he's just very urbane and worldly. And he's speaking all these languages. He's got this beautiful wife. And, but then you find out that he's like some kind of psychotic serial killer type dude.
Right.
I feel like this is the same way. It's like, I don't know that people, like, are there high functioning serial killers? Are there really like Hannibal Lecter types? Because this guy's
even...
You mean
like psycho?
Well, I mean, but...
Or, I mean, American Psycho.
Yeah, that can hold it together enough to have, like, powerful jobs and you know, do big things in the community, and then they come home and they have a...
You know what?
...fully automatic and loaded woman sacrifice chamber.
I actually... I can't give you any actual quotes or sources.
You don't know a person like this? Really?
No, quotes or sources from this. But I'm saying that they did a study where they found out that sociopathic people actually tend to be better CEOs and
I read that study too. Business I don't know runners. About it. I wasn't sure about the conclusions they drew.
I'm just saying the higher up you have to climb on top of people to be successful, the less you'd have to care about
sure,
them.
Sure, and
it seems
you know
to
what?
Make sense.
The Banshee writing room might have read that same article we're talking about and been like, oh man, we might be onto something here. So who knows? The thing is through all these scenes, I'm tense because like my weakness still is, I guess, what you call torture porn. Like, I don't like the hostels. I don't like the, you know, green sap. What was that thing that Eli Roth made this summer? It was like the green jungle or the green death or something.
Yeah, something like that.
I don't like that. I don't like Saw. I don't like that kind of stuff. So when...
I think it's gross and not suspenseful or thrilling.
Yeah, it's just unpleasant. So, like, the whole time I'm worried that they're going to gut, you know, graphically gut this woman and... It kind of fucked up with my enjoyment of the scenes. I didn't think there's a lot to enjoy here anyway, because it's like I'm in between rolling my eyes, I'm covering them.
I feel the same way. I mean, I think I should expand on what I said last episode, just real quickly, when I said that I didn't think the half rape they showed in the beginning, where they just alluded to it being happening instead of graphically showing it,
yeah,
was that I'm remembering they did show a very graphic rape to a woman on Banshee before.
That's what I'm saying. Banshee could totally, you know,
they'll go there.
Yes.
They'll have someone die by a semi-truck in a highway fight.
Yeah, no.
I mean, it just gets gross and weird, so you're always waiting for it to just go to that level.
And then when you got a woman that's tied up and screaming, you got this big curved knife, it's like, oh, God, this is not a good time.
And they don't, and they didn't sexually assault her? No. I was just like, wow. I
wasn't thinking that, but like, I felt like, I guess they tastefully removed her heart.
Yeah, I mean, they roofied her enough where she was like alive, but she didn't feel it or wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe she checked out way before it happened, but that was kind of you.
Yeah, I don't, like I said, this whole Satanist plot, I do not know what to make of. And I also, you know, if the killer truly is with outside of our inner circle of Banshee, like the who's who of Banshee, I don't know what it means to have Rebecca be killed by just a completely strange, unrelated occult plot.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like too much of a coincidence because, as she said, she's fucking dangerous. Also, one last thing before we move on. Are they eating bloody teeth?
Man, they cut to that thing.
Are they cutting her open and drinking?
Kind of
are they also vampires somehow?
Okay. I think it's some kind of drug that they're taking, like ecstasy or MDMA, to get hopped up on it. But it does look like they're eating a bowl full of human teeth. Like the first time I thought that, I'm like, oh my God, are they, like, why do they have a bowl full of teeth? And then the second time through, I'm like, okay, well now it's got to be something else. I'm watching. I'm like, shit, it still looks like little baby teeth. And maybe they do. Maybe they get high off baby teeth. I'm not up on my witchcraft.
Yeah. So,
oh, the other thing I want to say is there's a bunch of Satanists, right? It's not just these two. There's like, it could
there's
be 50
of them.
There's
at least six people in this
there's
room.
There's a sitting gallery where people are watching. There's other people with the leather pants on that are getting all bare-chested, and everybody's all red-dragoned up. I don't know. This town's got it all. It's got Amish. It's got neo-Nazis. It's got Satanists. It's like Nick Pizzolatto's wet dream.
Yeah.
This is season 3 of True Detective. Just buckle up.
Okay, so the next thing I've got are these one-off flashbacks. First is 3 months ago, Rebecca helping keep Hood healthy as he's healing from that gunshot wound. And then,
oh, she's keeping him healthy, all right.
Yep, and he makes a baby inside of her in a shockingly prudish way. Did you find that to be prudish?
Why prudish?
She kept her dress on. They did the hand job under the blankets. I mean, she kept her dress on, gets on top of him, pulls the covers around her. I mean, Banshee usually goes like full nude, just rock hard body. She's going at it.
She renegotiated her contract this year, and there's an ironclad only
when I'm dead.
Only dead rubber dummy nudity is allowed. Yeah, I don't know. No, it's I don't know. Like, I feel like that they're always Banshee writing like some kind of censorship train. Like, they don't want the FCC cracking down on them. And I understand that, like, FCC has no authority over cable television. However, if you always read about it, there's this unspoken agreement that if you guys self-police, we won't have to come in and do it for you. So I feel like they're always like, okay, well, we're showing this pretty graphic Satanist stuff, and Carrie's going to be snapping dudes' necks and burning them alive, so let's go a little softcore. Let's go to our Cinemax roots and do total softcore porn.
All right, I just thought it was interesting. And
but I don't know what it means. Like, does Hood have this deep relationship with her, or is she really in love with Hood? I never thought that Hood was in love with her.
I have... I'm glad you're sitting down. Okay. I have something very serious to tell you.
All right.
I don't think you have to be in love to make a baby.
No, no, but I'm saying, like, what... They shot this scene as if he... You know, she grabbed his ouchie, and he screams, and then he grabs her hand, but it's a little too tight, and he feels bad. Then he starts weeping and saying she needs to get away. Is he having, like, a Siobhan flashback? Or
maybe. It's been, how long has it been? Like, 15 months since he's had another woman? Assuming that...
Him and Carrie never had rampage sex?
Yeah. The only woman that's come to visit him is his daughter, and Rebecca's back, and they just got into this exciting...
I don't think him and Carrie would have rampage sex, because Carrie is all fucked up over her... Gordon. Fake husband dying, right. And he's all fucked up over Siobhan and all the Job being gone. So I don't think that they would be in that kind of mode for each other.
Right.
But, you know, like I said, I understand it from a purely physical level why Hood would be like, oh, there's a
22-year-old
hard body
just...
that wants to wiggle on my stick. Okay, I'll allow it. But for her, I think there's something different. Was it just to piss off her uncle?
I think they just find comfort in each other in some strange way. They've known each
other
for so long.
Sometimes you just got to get down on your buddy.
So this other scene was 4 months ago. I should have done these in reverse. Proctor drinking with a purpose as he's flashing back to Rebecca just bringing some rando home. And making eye contact with him while she was making out with this dude.
I think this is when the Bodecker kids.
Is when she peeked through his door that one time and he was having sex with a complete rando.
Yeah. Or one of the dancers, right?
I don't know.
He was always having sex with somebody.
Still a rando.
Little did she know that all the times that she peeped on him having sex, he was just having aggressive sex to release the sexual aggression he was feeling towards wanting to have sex with his niece. That's how I was interpreted that.
Until he did have a side niece.
Yeah.
I did not think it was a Bodecker, and if it was, then they sure tried their damnedest to convince us it wasn't.
Well, see, I don't...
Give him a completely different, like, outfit and hairdo and never show his face.
I paid no attention to try to remember his face because the Bodeckers were obviously a one-and-done plot on this season, but... I got to say that thing is sloppy storytelling of it somebody else because she was seducing the Bodeckers to get into their drug operation so she can finally get a piece on the side.
If I could
because
keep
Proctor
up
wasn't giving hers.
With the jarring shifts in time here, then I could tell you for sure that 4 months ago maybe she was or wasn't with this Bodecker when she was going about
she
was about 4 months ago because...
It was from last...
3 months ago, he was healing. She was having sex with Hood.
Yeah.
So it had to have been between...
Yes, that's how the timeline's going. And also, they showed us the flashback before this flashback, which was him going out and saying, look at this new drug barn I got. And she's like, oh, yeah, I can run double shifts and I can have this thing hop. And he's like, oh, no, this isn't for you. This is for the neo-Nazis.
No, you're right.
She's like, what the fuck? And he's like, I got something bigger for you. Do you think that he was trying to build her a political career?
No.
Like you're going to be like this. Well, I mean, this seems like what crime bosses always get stuck on. Like, I had to dig the ditches and burn the bodies and do the bad stuff, and I want my son or daughter to be the congressman or the president or whatever.
Hmm.
Like, they're going to go legit. This is what happens to the Corleones. It always throws them off, and I wonder if he had... Because do you think he's lying to her? Do you think he's just stringing her along? Because I don't think that's the tenor of their conversation.
I think that's the thing about people who lie pathologically is that it's not a lie to them.
Oh, that's another good point.
He plans on making it good. He does have a bigger plan for her. But what happens if someone else gives him a bigger offer? Then he'll say, well, you know what? This next thing I've got planned.
Do you think that accurately describes Hood, or Proctor rather? I thought Proctor was more of a man of his word, even if it wasn't necessarily in his best interest.
Well, in business, sure. But he never promised her this warehouse. He just...
No, he doesn't.
He just gives her the impression that if you come along with me, good things will happen. You'll get things.
But he gives her old... I mean, there was some... I think there's some expectations here. He gave her her old office and said, you can refurnish it the way... Like, I'm grooming you to be my successor. And then I think... I think... her going there and thinking that this is all mine and this is why you're showing it, I think that's perfectly justified. Now, her going and saying, I'm fucking dangerous and I'm going to... That seems a little crazy, and that's just why my bad bow tie Burton theory comes in. But I don't know. Like, I'm just wondering... The question in my mind is, if she stays patient, does he eventually, 5-10 years down the line, reward her with something truly awesome? Or is she right to be skeptical of his promises?
I think she's right to be skeptical.
Okay.
Skeptical. All
right.
Okay, so the next thing I have here is the Brock / Hood situation.
The interrogation?
All their story as it goes, including Veronica.
I thought their scenes were... I really liked them yelling at each other.
I know, because Brock knows it's not Hood. Hood's the very best he's got, and he's grasping at straws.
And Hood knows that he knows.
That's why he let himself get arrested.
But Brock also has no other leads, and he's very frustrated. And he's got this sheriff that's running roughshod over him, and now the sheriff that made him feel the most emasculated and the most, like, you know, second fiddle is now back. And some of his deputies feel personally loyal to him. I think it's like a real problem for his idea of him being sheriff.
Yeah, he's being...
And being in control.
He's being good policeman, which is, I guess the best he can do.
I thought they respected each other a little bit more after they teamed up to take down Clayton. Because, like, you know, of course, I guess Brock is being a tool.
Yeah.
But when Lucas says at the end, like, you know, he's like, well, I don't know anything. He's like, well, I guess
that about sums it up.
Yeah, it's like, I thought, wow, that was really going for the throat there, Hood.
Yeah. Carrie visits Lucas in jail and offers to use her house as collateral. And they hold hands, and I just feel like they had a connection there. But you're right. Again, it's the time spent together that maybe they're
I could see going to, like...
Friends with benefits.
I could see...
Sexy friends with benefits.
I could see going to visit Jim in jail and being like, hey, man, I don't know if they're going to give you bail, but they do. Consider my house collateral. That doesn't mean I want to fuck him.
You guys spoon willingly.
That's what
I'm saying. Whenever you go on a waitress.
That's because
I have to get a room to myself.
Yeah, sure.
It's awful.
Sure, sure.
So, yeah, not a good example.
It's nothing special.
So Proctor shows up and tries to get Lucas Hood out of jail. And did he really post his bail, or did he just snatch the keys off Cruz's
desk? I think he wants to just go in that cage and beat the piss out of Hood.
I think so, too.
He found out
she was pregnant, and Hood was like, let him in.
Because he's like, maybe you did, maybe you didn't. Either way, like, you got this beating coming, and Hood's like, yes, I do. Let the man in. Because they want nothing more than to destroy each other.
Yeah. Has been
because they both
the
blame
dawn of time.
I feel like at some root level they both blame each other.
Yeah.
Like, if it wasn't for you, Rebecca would be as okay as an Amish girl who's rebellious and doing drugs would be. And I think Proctor thinks the same way. Like, she would be my perfect evil companion,
right?
If you wouldn't put these high minded ideals of, you know, justice and honor and all that stuff into her head.
Yeah.
So they both blame each other for what's going on. And then, you know, Hood putting a baby inside her was...
That's something else.
If you can't handle your side niece making out with some rando, you sure ain't going to handle her.
Oh, man. How devastating would it be if she was pregnant with Proctor's baby? How fucked would this season be?
I don't know. Maybe she's double pregnant.
You arrest the mayor for getting his side niece pregnant?
It's the odd...
Double pregnant.
Yeah, it's the odd double pregnancy.
So FBI agent Veronica Lawson shows up, and she also questions Hood and knows that he's innocent as well.
Those old Amish women lied. You can get her mouth pregnant.
Lucas Hood calls her on being a crackhead as she finishes questioning him.
He's like, yeah, when she's like, oh, you must know FBI agents pretty well. And he just levels this devastating look at her. He's like, nope, but I know a burnout when I see one.
Whoa.
Now, to me, when I hear burnt, like, I didn't think much of this. in the first time through.
Right, but I was like, what the hell is he talking
but
about?
But using burnout in this context,
yeah.
Like, I do think he somehow smelled it on her.
This guy spent a lot of time in prison.
Like, yeah, I've seen
criminals in general.
I've seen crackheads, I've seen meth heads, I've seen them all, and mm-hmm. you are a variety of that. That's how I took it.
Yeah,
that I could agree. Be. He was just saying her obviously kind of lackadaisical, like not really taking the whole thing. I mean, it's not that she didn't take the investigation serious. But she's certainly an unorthodox FBI agent.
Or she's using her lower-level interrogation techniques and fake husband story type stuff on someone who it's not going to work on. So he's going to counter-read right through her.
Do you think they're going to do the triple audience cross of having this fake husband story be a real husband story?
She's wearing a wedding ring, I noticed.
I noticed that, too. I think that there were about one or two episodes from her dramatically saying, you know that fake husband story is a real husband story, and one single tear goes down, and then her and Hood are going to bone.
I don't know. You'd be amazed at the kinds of things I get away with telling people about you at work, though. It's shocking.
They've met me. I'm
you're just solidifying my stories.
I can hold multitudes.
So she shows up later at a crack den, kicks the crackheads out, and smokes up on her own. So there's that.
That was awesome. That's such a banshee thing.
It is. And that this professional woman could also just smoke crack and go about her business. I've never smoked crack, but I figure it's pretty hard to maintain while you're doing it.
I just feel like, is she smoking crack or meth? It's out of, and here's the other thing that I love about Banshee. He calls her a burnout. She later smokes crack/meth from a burnt out light bulb.
Ah.
Like, it's the opposite of, like, a light bulb over your head. It's like when you're sucking poison from a light bulb.
Right into your mouth, yeah.
Yeah, that's not an idea. That's a bad idea. But, yeah, no, she wakes up fresh as a daisy after rocking herself to sleep.
Yeah.
She wakes up, yep, this is Veronica.
So she's called to the scene of another victim, and this prompts them to release Hood because this woman couldn't have shown up dead if Hood had killed her. So,
I love how she says, thanks for the alibi. Like, what? I guess what she means that is if she had Hood wanted her, she's like, you knew I was not guilty last night. And yeah. She said, thanks for the alibi. Because if she had let him go last night, then he'd have been released.
And then there's another death,
and that would have been pretty bad. I guess so.
Yeah. So this Veronica and Hood plot ends with presumably them going home together. Or going to get a drink together.
Yes. I was surprised that they kind of left us hanging on there. You think he takes her to Sugar's? Sugar is not in the mood for anyone's shit. I think if Hood brings some strange to his bar.
An FBI strange at
that. He would lose his goddamn mind and completely justifiably
just
so.
Just burn down the bar. Maybe yeah, that's what needs to happen.
He's like, Carrie, do you still have that flamethrower?
So that's all I've got on them. On to Watts' storyline. So Watts shows up in front of the parole board again and knows he's going to be denied again, so he just shits all over them.
Yeah, he calls the woman a dyke. He calls Jewish. The Jew a Jew.
No. And the woman is Jewish.
The woman's Jewish?
Yeah, the woman's Jewish.
See, I thought when he said the Jewish woman, I thought he was making an effeminate dig at the at Ted.
No, you're talking about the actual Jewish woman who.
Well, it's
just
weird
because
they cut to Ted's face when he said that.
Well, he was talking to him. He said, "Ted, what about the I think Jew next to you?" Talking about the woman who just had birth and given it a Jewish name.
And he wanted to give her an angle. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's just basically being deliberately offensive because he knew they're never going to let him out.
Right. So.
It's like reporting to work the day after you won the lottery. You're just there to be an asshole at this point. Yeah.
This scene is just to illustrate that he has bombed this parole hearing as hard as he possibly can, right?
Yes.
So then we show that Burton is in the back of Ted's car and he talks him into not denying parole this time.
Yeah, I interpret that as that he probably visited at least two to three of the parole board, because I don't think any one person can unilaterally say, oh yeah, this guy's got parole.
I mean, I don't know how the system works, but it seemed like Ted or the guy in the middle was the head of the parole board.
But you know how ridiculous it would be to like have just show three scenes of Burton. Like, this time I got an ice cream cone. This time I got a lollipop. This time I got a puppy. Like, you know, he's always in the back seat. Like, you know, it's like they can't do that three times.
Well, here's the thing. I think Watts appropriately and threatens Sylvia. By just knowing the name of her daughter, I feel like that's threat in itself enough.
Oh.
I mean, but again, how many times has he done this? What did he say? 3, 4, 5 times?
Yeah, like they got to be used to his shtick. Because do you think Watts knew that he was going to be auto-paroled?
No,
here?
Absolutely not.
Me either.
I don't even think he knew until he walked out the door and said, are you my ride?
Do you think that somehow, why is Proctor auto-parole him? Is because he's getting the sense that Calvin's getting antsy? He's got this sixth sense about when a business deal is about to go bad? Because they all set this up with having, like, Carrie sees them, he is having a fairly in-depth conversation with Calvin outside his warehouse. I feel like he's got something, and the fact that, like, you know, they weren't satisfied with how they were handling the Red Bones, like, I feel like he thinks Watts would do a better job managing this whole situation.
Yeah, I agree. So Calvin is getting drunk at a bar, and he invites his foreman? A dude that he works with, his number two.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
Jump in if you know what I'm talking about.
I think it is the foreman of the drug barn.
Someone high up, someone who doesn't really want to have a shit, but someone who still has to listen to it.
Yes.
When he tells you to come out and drink, and he pours you way too much whiskey in a glass. And he says, for real, I'm going to kill Watts this time. I'm serious, man. I'm going to do it.
I know it's the third episode I'm talking about, but this time. This time it's not a threat.
So Watts gets out of prison and Burton is there to pick him up with an ice cream cone. Did you think this was uncharacteristically Bunker? Threateningly eating Burton? What did I say?
You said Bunker.
Oh.
You pulled an Aaron. No way to say it.
I spend way too much time in here with you. Burton.
We've seen Burton do some pretty repugnant shit in his time. He's ripped out women's throat pipes.
I'm going to defend that. I think that was really awesome because she would have done it to him.
Indeed.
They were really destroying each other.
But wasting ice cream when arguably everyone knows the cone is the best part. You suffer through all the ice cream above the cone to get to the perfect mix of crunch. And he just throws that on the ground like it's nothing?
Burton, you
fucking monster.
I'll defend him. I hate the cone. I would throw the cone away, but the ice cream that's still inside, you don't waste that.
You hate the cone?
I hate the cone.
Well, I better get all your fucking cones from here on out.
You always do.
No, I never get your cones.
I always give you the soggy cone after I suck my tongue and it licked out of the ice cream.
Well, maybe that's why I just don't want it.
Yeah. Okay. You're right. We've got some interesting feedback about that.
Okay.
And Watts shows up at Calvin's house later that night, and it's revealed that, he's Maggie's father.
I did not know that.
That makes total sense.
It does make total sense. And the way they close this episode with him singing the Nazi, national song.
What's it called?
It's called the Horst Wessel song. It's all about the stormtroopers are on the march and the fatherland's on the rise and Hitler is leading us to glory. It's like a hardcore Nazi national anthem.
Put you to sleep and have some nice dreams.
Sure, sure. I mean, but that's the kind of shit that, you know, she was talking about to Bunker when they're, you know, like, this is the kind of poison she grew up with. This is why she became a neo-Nazi's wife, because this guy from a very early age told her a version of the truth that this doesn't... That's the thing. Like, you don't... When you're raised as a child to believe something crazy, you really don't have a chance. It's like, right. You know, it's like everyone out there that believed in Santa Claus, imagine if your mom and dad had used that kind of power to tell you that, like, only white people are good.
Yeah.
Like, that shit sticks with you and then they never told you, oh, surprise, it's actually a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, and as you grow up, you surround yourself with people who are still saying the same thing, and you're like, this is the truth, we know it.
And that attitude is such a point, like, no one, it's a self-selecting thing. You go around rocking that attitude, no one's going to want to be around you except for the other people to agree with you.
Right.
It's like this vicious echo chamber. Okay. Nazis are bad.
So we get
I know it's a controversial stand, but I'm taking it.
We're taking it. Job has trouble being alone, being exposed to light, and being exposed to sound as he's having trouble sleeping. But he's made his way onto the bed this time. We see a scene of Bunker giving Cruz another police file with the address of this drug warehouse.
No, he's giving Carrie. Oh, but the thing is,
he's giving Carrie the address, and then because they're the same person.
Because Cruz is in every fucking... Every time that Bunker is on the phone...
Bunker may as well just be handing it straight to Cruz.
It's like, oh, so wait a second, Carrie. I need to go somewhere private where we can't talk. Okay, I'm right outside. I'm
stand right by Cruz's desk.
I'm at Cruz's desk now. Just give it to me. And it's the thing is, at this point... It'd be one thing if the audience knew Cruz is a double agent and right. they didn't, but everyone knows Cruz is a double agent.
Last episode, Proctor said, well, I'll pay you based on how much you do. So I guess Proctor's going to be paying her the same because all the information was just handed to her. So anyway, Brunker gives Carrie this information. Cruz is watching from the window because, and I'm pretty sure it's been obviously made point that Cruz is the inside person, right? Like, last time they let people out of prison.
Brock and Bunker, in the very first episode,
they let people out and conversation looked
to
at her.
Let us know that she is a double agent.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like Bunker
so if you forgot get up, about that if lesson. You get up and excuse yourself from your desk, who is it specifically that you don't want to hear you?
It's got to be Cruz, right?
Okay. I feel like we made that clear.
He needs a cone of silence, is what he needs.
He does. He needs a cone of shame. So Cruz is watching, of course. Carrie goes and scouts out the warehouse and calls Bunker and lets him know that his brother Calvin and all the neo-Nazis are in business with Proctor.
Why do you think, as he says, well, this changes everything, is this because
it's his brother and I guess he still feels protective over him?
No, but the thing is, I think he was feeding him information about his brother.
He seems surprised to know that Proctor was in league with his brothers.
Yes, but that's why I think he says that this changes everything, is because this is now affecting like the politics of the situation, and he needs to think about it, whereas Carrie's like, YOLO.
YOLO swag.
Yeah, I wasn't sure exactly what he meant by this changes everything, and I know what she means, but him saying this changes everything, I don't get it.
Me either, but we'll never know because she did it anyway.
Yeah, she's like, fuck it.
She blaze burned it. That bitch down. She said, blaze it. And she set the truck on fire. She set the... She set
everything on fire.
She set everything on fire. And she did it so methodically. She set fire to the office first, to the boxes, to the chemicals. She even got all of the undershelves.
She was burning it all.
She was. And then she saved the chemicals for last, which is super smart. She was going to dump the gun and run before there was an explosion. But
it almost fucked her, though.
Yeah.
She almost didn't get out in time. The other thing I want to say is I love how kinetically they cut this together because, like, it's all a whole bunch of scenes of her methodically torching a place, cut with her beating the shit out of everybody that's conscious inside this building behind plastic so you could just see. She's almost like getting a Batman treatment. Like,
well,
she's
it was very reminiscent of Uma Thurman in Kill Bill, you know, when they were doing the sword fight scene in between those screens, the paper screens.
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of. But very cool. I like the way this was done.
It's a great action sequence.
And she also got
leather suit with the guns everywhere. She looks like such a badass. Oh my God.
She is such a badass.
And her running sequence.
And then she got to run away from an explosion without looking back once. Aaron.
Yes. And she's doing that, like, almost like Tom Cruise run, where it just looks like she's moving a million miles an hour.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was great.
Very
cool. It was
great. But throughout the scene is Bunker. Jesus, I keep doing Aaron syndrome.
Well, you're in here with me way too much, I've heard.
Job is having panic attacks in the car, and very close to getting out and going in there and doing something, but he trusted the plan and he stuck to the plan, and guess what happened? It worked.
A lesser show, Walking Dead, would have the traumatized person act crazy and get out and like, I've got to save her, and run in and get himself into more danger and then carry. This show, like, Job is fully losing his shit, and they built us up through the whole episode to understand why he's losing his shit.
But to never forget that he's a fucking professional.
Yeah, like, I am no good to carry.
It's a tumbler.
It was so nice to see.
I totally passed that scene, but yeah, he effortlessly broke into her gun safe and got himself to come along.
Well, but it's just a tumbler lock.
I love his sass. Has not died inside of him. He's
You think that'll be a Tumblr macro image? It's just a tumbler?
We're going to make it.
Yeah. Like anytime
if it's
gets,
not.
Anytime someone gets worked up on Tumblr, you just say, it's just a Tumblr.
It's just a Tumblr.
It's just a Tumblr, bitch.
Can you make that the picture
it's
for
just
this
a fucking
episode
Tumblr
when you post it on Facebook?
Yeah. Just him saying it's just a Tumblr.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you think that her Tumblr safe code is 2321?
It's got to. It's got to be.
Okay.
What are they doing if not?
Yeah. What a waste. But also, kind of stupid of her to put it in the opening credits and then have the same code. It's like making your son's birthday your password for everything.
Who would possibly do that?
That's all I got. What do you got?
Billy Raven. Raven sighting. Do you think we'll see more of him? Or is that just like, hey, this is the last season of Banshee. Here's a goodbye to this guy.
Yeah, I think that's just to let us know that he was on the reservation. That woman died on the reservation. They're all there together. And okay, he's doing good things. And Billy Raven's still a good cop.
He's the Kinahu? Kinaho? Is that is that a fake Indian tribe?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, he's the Kinahu reservation chief now. And it's kind of, I feel like that they're going to bring him in something. They're going to have to season to work him in. Why not?
He's been worked in.
No, I mean, really worked in. Really worked in.
Really work him in there.
The other thing I want to ask is when Job finds her washing stash.
Her washer
her
and dryer?
Her weapon stash.
Okay.
He's like, a stack unit, really? He says, this looks like you're ready to start a war. She goes, not start a war, finish one.
That was pretty cool.
Is her mission to take down...
Proctor.
Like, but
I
why?
I think Proctor. Because why? Wasn't it... Tell me it wasn't Gordon's mission throughout his run as mayor and DA to take down Proctor and to make this town
good. Yeah, that makes
again.
Sense. So she's doing this as just a way to finish up her old family business.
Make the town a safer place for her family to live. I mean...
Eh. Yeah, I mean, if she takes down Proctor, they've already taken down, the rabbit. Her arc is essentially complete at that point. Okay, yeah. I like it. We have anything else to talk about? Or are we ready for some feedback?
We need to talk about feedback.
All right, feedback. You can send feedback in to banshee@baldmove.com or on forums.baldmove.com where we have a thread for every episode. All nice and bunched
up. For mostly every episode. And
for every episode.
We have some feedback from last week that came in, strangely enough, right after we finished recording.
Oh, just missed a cutoff. That's the deepest cut when you because you're waiting a full 7 days if you just miss the cut.
Yep, but
to the bone.
You made second cut, so there's that. Nathan P. I cut most of his email because it was from last week, and everything he said came
that
to
is
fruition.
The deepest cut.
But I thought I'd include this because he called it first. Anyone want to make bets on when Hood fucks a new FBI-ish agent joining in the next episode? In the words of a great Bald Move co-host, just fuck already. Right?
I think Hood, he's got to take a poke at Cruz, and he's got to take a poke.
Just fuck already.
He's got to take a poke at Veronica, or he's not the Hood I know.
Also, that's going to be a Bald Move t-shirt. Just fuck already.
Just fuck already.
thought you might... Oh, I'm sorry. Just rolled right into the next one. This is from Matt F. Thought you might find this interesting. I went to college in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, near Amish country during the late 90s. And during that period, there was a huge controversy over Amish drug dealing in connection with a skinhead-affiliated biker gang. Basically, a couple Amish kids on Rumspringa got recruited by the Pagans biker gang to deal coke all over Lancaster County. And I'm pretty sure the story is the inspiration for the show. Included are some links to press reports if you want to do a deep dive. Do you want to include that in the show notes? Because
I can.
Super interesting.
That's insane. So this is like ripped from the 20 years ago headlines?
Right, yeah.
Okay, well, that makes me feel stupid.
Some personal experience here. Growing up in the area and going to a lot of local punk rock shows, I constantly ran into skinheads trying to recruit young outcast types with difficult home situations. These were really serious assholes.
So which white power group did he join?
That's what I was going to say. Were you on Rumspringa or were you a biker dude? Because this story seems legit. They were really serious assholes. In college, I never got into harder drugs, but I definitely had friends who bought coke from the Amish mafia. Sometimes truth is stranger than fiction. He wrote friends in quotation marks, so I don't know if I was supposed to include that.
I don't know. The word friends, or?
He didn't. Okay. I had friends who brought coke from the Amish mafia.
Uh-huh.
So thanks for sharing that. We'll include those links in the show notes. He wrote a lot more, but...
That's the other thing, because I've heard that like the Amish Mafia stuff that you see on like the Discovery Channel is like 100% horse shit. Like it's like breaking, you know, he's like the Walter White of. But like, it wouldn't surprise me if there's been a renegade Amish or three.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I've seen Orange is the New Black.
That's not exactly what I was going for, but sure, sure.
Grendelby from the forum said, "This is
Grendelby." It's not Grendelby. I was thinking it was a Beowulf reference, but that's because I'm dyslexic and
did you ask that?
Drunk half the time. Yeah, no, there's a big thing thread about it.
Oh, shit. Well, Trundleby.
Trundlebed.
I think episode 3, Banshee was starting to shift gears, but I'm starting to notice some of the production changes that Aaron mentioned. The hacker chase was exciting, but I think in previous seasons with a full budget, that would have been a one-take continuous scene. The Job sniper scene was a little underwhelming as well. And again, I think about the smaller season budget. So, again, that was from last week. I don't know how much of that applies to this week. We got a cool burn it all down shot.
Well, the real unfortunate thing is I wonder if they'd known last year, because this year they came back and they've got less than half the audience they had from the year before. I wondered if they would have just gone really big last season and wrapped it up nice and neat instead of doing it on a cliffhanger.
Because
it does, like, I'm enjoying this season, but it's not nearly as good as the previous three seasons.
My opinion is you end the show in the scene where Carrie and Hood kill her father. That's done. That's a wrap. That is one clean, concise show.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, I thought season 2 is kind of the peak Banshee, and season 3 kept up with that for the most part. But
this season 2
was all about Clayton, wasn't it? And then season 3 was all about the military heist.
Yeah.
So like, I wouldn't give any of those up. But this season, like, I don't know. I guess I'm glad to see more Banshee. Here's the thing that's been bugging me. It really feels like a sucky thing that Rebecca was killed by someone that's outside of the Banshee inner circle. Like, that just feels like such a meat. Now, they might do something cool with it later on. But, like, the setup of that just feels... It's got to feel anticlimactic because some weird Satanist killing her is automatically less important than if, you know, one of the good guys kills her by mistake, or Kai has to kill her because she's off the, you know, she's running off.
Right, one of the neo-Nazis is keeping her in, like, a pit in the ground outside and making her cook meth.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or the Red Bones did it as a try to, you know, get the rest control from the renegade mob.
I feel like Rebecca could be killed easily. I feel like...
Yeah, well, she says she's dangerous. I believe that, but she's not... She's dangerous because she's kind of an agent of chaos, but I don't take her as seriously as a badass as I do Carrie or Cruz.
Right, exactly.
You know, let alone Hood and
Siobhan.
Yeah, anybody. She just never. I don't know. She never reads dangerous to me. She always reads as way overconfident and way too young and naive. But the things that she's saying to Proctor, I thought had a good point. Like, when I was your age, I was running the show. Like, you were my age, rather. You were running the show. But then, you know, the perfect comeback is like, well, you're no me.
Yeah.
You were a rebellious girl who ran off because she couldn't kiss the boys she wanted to kiss. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I just never take her as seriously as I do any of the other characters.
Agreed. Nathan says, worst thing Burton has done so far is throwing that ice cream on the ground. Agree? I know you do.
Totally.
Also, I have the funny feeling Brock is going to die this season. At the start, Banshee had 3 police officers, Siobhan, Emmett, and Brock. Emmett died in season 2, and Siobhan died in season 3. There might be something poetic in a dark way. That Hood impersonating a sheriff would lead to the deaths of his team. I don't want Brock to die, but I feel his days are numbered. Maybe Proctor kills Brock. motivating Hood to finally take Proctor down, and thus bringing Hood's arrival in Banshee as a sheriff full circle. He's fulfilled the original purpose of the first mayor. I'm assuming that's the one who died in the building explosion when Rebecca was first brought on board.
You know, this would also make the happy birthday Brock stuff mean something as well. The other thing I wanted to mention is that, because he's talking about the different seasons, what happened. We've been talking to Colin Clayton, the guy Clayton, the 7 foot tall Indian warlord. It's actually Chaitin.
Chaitin?
Chaitin, yeah. Oh. I wanted to make that correction before we got a million emails about it.
That's an easy mistake to make by your standards.
Clayton. Well, sure. I'm never going to mock someone for getting a wrong name. I just want to issue a correction.
Forum user Hypergenes B.
That's Shane. That's Shane.
Shane the Bowman.
Bowman.
We know who you are. Dushku, the Hannibal-esque serial killer BS. Oh, this is a dissenting opinion. Just be warned. And the neo-Nazi tropes. It's just so bad. I can't believe the show has fallen from the delight of season 3 to this. Man, I thought 4.3 had the show turning a corner and heading into full steam, open highway. Instead, it's becoming a blender of cliches. What a bummer.
I mean, I can't...
Talk the bow man off the ledge.
I think 403 definitely turned the corner and 404 is more of the same, but it's entirely possible that the season never gets under the weight of the serial killer plot. Like, this is the tropiest, laziest piece of story, and if they don't find a way to subvert this somehow in the next two or three episodes, like, you do kind of wonder, what was the impetus for the Job cliffhanger? What was the impetus for coming back with a reduced season, with a reduced budget, an entirely new location? Like, why? Why? Because, right. See, up through season 3, Banshee was a delight, and it felt like it was like, it also felt like you were in this hidden club. Like, you know, the only cool kids knew about Banshee because only like 500,000 people were watching any given Friday.
Hey, have you heard about Banshee?
It's like early season, X-Files, where you felt like you were kind of plugged in to the inner circle.
Right.
And I don't know, like, I guess it's more of an exclusive club now that only 250,000 people are watching any given Friday. But you do, I mean, I don't know. Like, I would be surprised if they came back with nothing really to say. But on the other hand, I also feel like if they had the Job cliffhanger, they felt like, well, shit, we gotta maybe that's what their original sin was. They shouldn't have left it with the cliffhanger. They should have gave us closure on last season,
right?
Because there weren't any obvious storylines to expose to kind of like go through, and which is I think why we get this fucking serial killer. I don't know. I'm not as down on it as Shane. I saw that Shane, like, you know, he's not super happy, and I don't blame him. But on the other hand, I feel like there is still. So at this point, does it feel like it's already an indictment that we're halfway through the season and we're talking about this?
Yeah.
Like, if this is episode 2, but season 4, we're through, and, like, what's really happened? Rebecca's dead. Another girl died.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Carrie said a met, but there's very little that's actually happened. Job's come. I mean, I guess a lot of stuff has happened, but it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah. Hey, I'm just your ride along. Ride or die, bitch. I come with you as we watch the deaths of all of our favorite shows happen on TV.
I'm starting to get a complex. Every single time we commit to a podcast, it feels like we're on the downswing. Like,
well, you know what? There's a
it's
light.
It's not too late. It's not too late to not do Penny Dreadful, is all I'm saying.
No, I was going to say there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Penny Dreadful is it. We're going to bring this back.
The curse of Aaron and Cecily won't strike on Penny Dreadful?
It's not the curse of Aaron and Cecily. It's... Rennie from the forum says, I, for one, welcome Eliza Dushku on the show, because at least I can recognize her. Aaron and Cecily discussed how all the women on the show look the same, and it is so confusing.
It is.
At the opening scene, first I thought, what the hell is Calvin's wife doing with this creepy dude?
Yep.
But nope, it's not her. Just another clone. I'm glad we met the creepy devil-worshipping couple, because I would have had a hard time swallowing it if it had been someone we already knew. We've had these characters for 3 seasons, and I just didn't buy any of them suddenly turned into serial killers cutting out hearts of young girls. I have to wonder if the attack on Rebecca really was just random, or if they had some connection to her. I felt the same way. The couple feel a little something out of a Criminal Minds, but I'm holding out hope that Banshee will put their own twist on the story. I have a feeling Deva might end up as the next victim. Final thought, how badass was Carrie with the flamethrower? I hope there's more where that came from. Banshee, please.
Can I say, so here's the thing. Are we supposed to understand that the bowl of baby teeth is this Amish designer drugs? Because that would be an interesting connection.
No, it's not what they look like. Go back and watch the season again. God damn it.
I'm just saying.
It's like, not. You got to watch the seasons again where they introduce what he's selling and why.
But I'm saying, like, there's all kinds of different shapes and sizes of drugs I've seen coming out of that factory. I just, that would be the easy answer.
So you think they
answer.
Were smoking designer drugs out of a light bulb?
That they had some deal with Rebecca and she double-crossed them and they're like, well, you're attractive. Because the other thing we need to talk about the Satanists is they have some kind of fixation on attractiveness.
Yeah.
They mentioned that. Like, they also do you think she's pretty? I think you. Who do you think is the heel? Like, are they talking about Satan? Are they talking about, like, do they have an overboss? Are they trying to, is this really Hellboy and they're trying to bring back the great old ones? Like, I don't know. Is this going to end in tentacles and shit? I don't know.
I hope so. I certainly hope so.
That would be awesome if they're like, you know, they're sitting there and they're like, you know what? People watched season one of True Detective and they really wanted tentacles. Like, these people were ready for the old gods to return. Banshee season four is going to give him that. That would almost make this worth it if they just brought, you know, all the
just
different
went
Cthulhu.
Fucking balls to the wall.
Yeah, this is just apocalyptic.
Aliens showed up. Just make it happen.
Sure,
whatever it is.
Sure, Iron Man and the Hulk show up.
Yeah, all that stuff.
All right, if you want to give us more feedback, do it at banshee@baldmove.com or join us on the forums at forums.baldmove.com.
So if you want to hear more from these hot messes of people, our next Banshee episode will be released next Monday. Our first Penny Dreadful, which we're calling Penny Earful, will be released on sometime this week. We'll be doing a preview cast, and the season starts on Sunday, May 1st. Are you excited?
I'm excited.
And
I'm actually in
Game
overload
of Thrones
right now
starts tonight.
Game of Thrones is tonight. Me and Jim's got the full. We'll have the instant cast out. Already by the time you've heard this, and then our full coverage on Tuesday, and our spoiler cast is on Friday. Big things happening. We're gonna try to get this Penny Dreadful podcast out on Tuesdays.
Okay,
so
that sounds good.
But yeah, that's. But no, I'm excited about Penny Dreadful. I'm excited about Game of Thrones. It's crazy. It's gonna be cool.
There's a lot coming down the pike, so keep your ear to the ground while we set a flamethrower to your podcast feed. I'm Cecily.
I'm Aaron. See you next week.
Bye.